I would like to introduce our speaker, Terry W., and she sent a brief bio, but I think a lot of us know her, have experienced her, been in her presence, and we all love her to pieces. So what she shared with me, she said she is a longtime member of Al-Anon. She began attending meetings down in Orlando, Florida, before she moved back to Northern Virginia. She has done a lot of service work over the years, including GR, DR, alternate delegate, and delegate. Currently, she is serving as a GR again and is on the new long-range plan and is the new long-range planning committee chairperson. So we welcome you, Terry, to share what you would like regarding celebrating Lois W. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for this opportunity. Normally when, you know, I'm asked to speak, I come out and tell my story or pieces of my story, but tonight is different. Tonight I'm going to tell you Lois's story. So I've been doing a deep dive into our literature, including Lois's biography, Lois Remembers, and you know, some of our other literature that talk about it. So let's dive in, and then I have some pictures for you. And we'll just see, you know, she was 97 years old when she passed away. So we have a lot of story to cover in our time together tonight. So let's start with a little bit of her biography. She was born March 4th, 1891. And she was born Lois Burnham in Brooklyn, up in New York. Her father was a gynecologist and a surgeon, and the family lived half of the year in a vacation spot in Vermont, where the father treated vacationers, and then half of the year they lived back in Brooklyn. By her account, she had a happy childhood. She had a pony! I'd say that's pretty good. I think I have a picture of her on her pony. The youngest sibling unfortunately passed away in childhood, but other than that, it was a happy family. All of her Lois and all her siblings were educated privately. They were educated in Quaker Friends School, and then when Lois went to college, she went to Parker Collegiate Institute, and she graduated with a concentration in fine arts. By all reports, she was quite talented at drawing. She loved music and singing, and you know, things went pretty well in her childhood. No alcoholism. Her parents were happily married, and they were prosperous, and they, you know, they knew people. Like, one of their relatives married one of the Rockefellers, and they met a lot of important people in their time. When she graduated from college, she went to work first as a volunteer at the YWCA. Of course, we're leading up to World War I, as you recognize. And while she was there, she trained as an occupational therapist. They took a years-long course and condensed it down into 2 months because there was a crying need for people to work with soldiers as they started coming back. Anyway, so in the summer of 1914, Lois met a local boy, a local Vermont boy named Bill Wilson. He was a friend of her younger brother, Rogers. So over the course of, you know, summers, they spent a lot of time together. And then Lois and Bill became secretly engaged the summer after they met. And I think that she was a little apprehensive because she was already 23 and a college graduate. Bill was younger. He was 19. And he was putting himself through college, so I think she was a little apprehensive of what her parents might say about this. But as the lead up to the war progressed, Bill was enrolled in officers training camp, and they married on January 24th, 1918, because Bill was due to be sent to Europe shortly, so they wanted to marry before that. Her family actually did approve, and all things seemed to go ahead, except for that awful World War I business that popped up. So anyway, I'm going to tell you about their early married years. A little background on Bill. Bill's family had a history of alcohol abuse. His parents, now keep in mind, this is 1918. His parents divorced when Bill was only 9, which is somewhat unusual for the time. Most likely because of his father's drinking. Nobody in the family would talk about it. Turns out Bill's paternal grandfather also drank. So Bill's family had long cautioned him to avoid alcohol because of this family history. And Lois writes about how she did not see him drink alcohol until shortly before they were married. She said she always thought he had remarkable willpower because in social settings, she never saw him drink anything stronger than ginger ale or sarsaparilla or birch beer, which is not alcoholic, if you don't know that northern birch beer. But shortly before they married, he was in the officer's training camp. She had gone up to visit him, and she couldn't find him, so she asked some of his fellow officer trainees, and they said, oh, we had to carry him home, put him to bed because he was so drunk. Well, Lois claimed at the time she was not concerned about that because she thought she could fix him. Who does that sound like? Any single one of us? So I want to read you a short quote of what she wrote about that at the time. Let's see. So she had looked for him, couldn't find him. His buddy said that they dragged him home and put him to bed. There I found him, dead to the world, with a bucket by his head. His drinking had started shortly before we were married. It didn't occur too often and usually began at parties. I used to tease him by saying that he could resist the boys who offered him a drink, but not the gals. I was only slightly unhappy about this drinking because I felt confident I could persuade him to return to his former abstinence. I could fix him. Living with me would be such an inspiration, I was sure. He would not need alcohol. Lois is definitely one of us, I would say. All right, so the war goes on. And Bill was deployed. He went to Europe. Lois, meanwhile, stayed back in New York and worked as an occupational therapist at a couple of hospitals. And she was assigned to work with some shell-shocked soldiers as they started coming back from the front. When Bill was finally released and came home at the end of World War I, he had trouble settling into employment. He tried a variety of jobs. Nothing suited him. He felt restless and couldn't seem to settle on what he wanted to do. Lois, meanwhile, is working as the occupational therapist still, and they are living near with around her family. So they decided a good plan would be for the two of them to take an extended hiking trip through New England and spend some time together and figure out what Bill wanted to do. When they were away from the city, which is one reason why Lois was always eager to do these trips with him, his drinking decreased dramatically. So, you know, Lois assumed that this was part of, you know, this was a good thing. She'd take him away from New York City, where the temptation to drink was so strong, and get him out in the country, and, you know, things would be good. And they were good. They went on an extended hiking trip, which is kind of unusual for this time in the world. But eventually they realized that they needed to return to New York City to make money. Immediately after they returned, his drinking resumed. he decided he would try being a lawyer. His grandfather had encouraged him, or no, excuse me, it was Lois's grandfather who had encouraged him to take up law. So he enrolled in night school, working a variety of jobs during the day. He did complete his law degree, but he never even picked up his certificate, and he never worked a day as a lawyer. Meanwhile, Lois continued her work as an occupational therapist and continued working with the YWCA. The first few years of their married life was very difficult. Between Bill's drinking and his erratic employment and the financial insecurity, Lois also suffered a series of 3 ectopic pregnancies, each requiring a series of surgeries, which left her ultimately unable to have children. This was very disappointing for both of them. Lois applied to an adoption agency for them to adopt a child. However, the agency never seemed to be able to find a suitable child for them. Bill thought it was because of his drinking. Lois, in fact, did not learn for sure until 1974, after Bill had passed away, that wasn't in fact the case. One of their friends, who Lois had listed as a reference to the adoption agency, did in fact tell them about Bill's drinking, and in her opinion, they were unsuitable as parents because of that instability. Lois didn't know that at the time, so they continued on. They took many camping, hiking, living in the country hiatuses, primarily to get Bill away from the city in an attempt to control his drinking. Every time they would take these trips, they had good times together. It worked. Bill's drinking either stopped or decreased dramatically. And then when they had to go back to the city to start working to earn money again, his drinking resumed, and each bout was worse than the last. Finally, she appealed to her father after, some pretty serious drinking episodes. You know, her father was a medical person. He was a doctor. And he referred Bill on to a hospital in New York that dealt with rehabilitation for alcoholics. And it was at that first rehab stint, Bill and Lois learned that his drinking was not a moral problem, as was the common belief at the time, but it was a physical problem akin to an allergy to alcohol. For Lois, this was good news, and for Bill, too. They concluded that, now that we know this is a physical problem, not a moral weakness, Bill will be able to avoid alcohol and life will be good. Sadly, that was not the case. That pattern continued of, he would abstain for a while, Lois would get hopeful, Bill would find some kind of employment, and he worked a variety of jobs. He wound up doing a lot of work on Wall Street with investments and selling stocks. And he came up with this brilliant idea that rather than just telling people what stocks to buy, he should investigate various companies so he could give a better evaluation of what stocks were worthy and what which ones are not. We're not up to the stock crash of 1929 yet. So they cooked up a plan where they were going to take a year off and travel around the country, and it would be part nature cure and part going around and visiting this company, that company, the other company, investigating them, and Bill would write up his reports. Bill, I think, was probably extremely intelligent, and this was his own theory, and he got a lot of people enthusiastic about it. He learned a lot. His drinking was decreased as long as they were traveling, but whenever they visited a city and he investigated, sure enough, the drinking resumed. So this went on for a while. They gave up their home. They put, I think at this point, they gave away everything. They couldn't afford a car, so they were traveling around in a motorcycle with a sidecar. So these frequent country cures seriously interrupted Lois's career. By this time, she had completed training to work as an interior decorator, because her degree had been in fine arts. So this is what she wanted to do. And to get work as an interior decorator, she started at Macy's, the department store. And they said, oh, no, you don't start as a decorator. So they put her to work demonstrating folding card tables and chairs. And she was actually employed by the company that made the cards table. They paid her a minimal salary and she got a small commission. And she was good at it and she got promoted. And so she worked herself up to, you know, a reasonable sales position within Macy's. But then, this is after their year trip, she decided she needed to take Bill to Vermont again because of his drinking. So she took a 3-month leave, which kind of erased her progress as an interior decorator with that particular store. All in all, he went through 3 rehab stints at this hospital. And Lois was getting ever more despairing of his ever ending his drinking. The doctor at the rehab center, he went to the same one 3 times. He said he didn't think Bill was going to be able to get sober. So she feared she was going to have to take care of him and support him all the rest of their lives. So moving forward, they survived the crash. They did actually better than some of their friends. Bill, through all the contacts he had made with Wall Street, he actually got an employment offer up in Canada, where evidently the crash was not quite as bad in Canada as it had been in New York. So they went there and they worked for a while, and he did quite well. He made a lot of money while they were up there. But eventually the repercussions of the stock market crash began to be felt in Canada. So between that and his continuing drinking, he lost that job. And they had to give up their fancy apartment and sell their car. And they limped back down to New York City and wound up living with her parents again. And they, you know, the same routine. They limped along for a while. But finally, Bill finds sobriety through the Oxford group, and Lois has a spiritual awakening. This is the really interesting part of their lives for me. In 1934, Ebby, who was a friend of Bill's, who also had a very serious drinking problem, he found sobriety through the Oxford group. The Oxford group is an evangelical Christian movement started by an American, Frank Buckman, a Lutheran minister. So Ebby got Bill involved in the Oxford group. And actually the Oxford group was a series of Oxford groups. Their involvement with Oxford group ultimately led to the beginning of AA. So the way the Oxford group worked, the founder, Frank Buckman, he didn't want to just work from the pulpit. So he formed small groups of 6 to 12 disciples, he called them. And these members worked directly in the community, not just in the context of the church. Buckman believed that only by changing the individual could the world be changed for the better. And here are some Oxford group precepts, and see if they sound familiar to you. Surrender your life to God. Take a moral inventory. Confess your sins to God and another person, make restitution, give of yourself to others with no demand for return, pray to God for help to carry out these principles. And there were 4 absolutes: absolute honesty, absolute purity, absolute unselfishness, and absolute love. So now you know where a lot of the foundation of our 12 steps came from. So this went on for a while. Bill became very enthusiastic about the Oxford group, and every time he felt a relapse coming on, he would go out and find another alcoholic somewhere to help that alcoholic, because it helped him maintain his sobriety. So there was a long period after 1934 where Bill combined his Wall Street contacts and traveling around to, you know, do work with that. And while he was there, working with local alcoholics and friends of friends of friends, and started a whole bunch of Oxford group, sort of a spinoff. The Oxford group did not restrict their work to alcoholics. Bill was only interested in working with fellow alcoholics. So this was really the period in which Alcoholics Anonymous began. So armed with his newfound sobriety and his Oxford group friends, he went out and got a bunch of other alcoholics. And they were like, we need a drunk because I want a drink. And it's only by helping another drunk that I can stay sober. During this time, Lois was staying in New York because she was building her decorating business. She was working for a furniture company at this point, I believe. But she was also starting to get private jobs. And she felt, you know, she missed Bill. She missed their time alone like they had had in the country or when they were traveling. So when Bill would come back in town, she would join him at the Oxford group and at his new fellowship meetings. She did not feel that she needed the instruction in spiritual principles that the alcoholics needed. And this is, we're going backwards a little bit into her origins. She had been raised in the Swedenborg faith that her grandfather had been a minister for. Swedenborg, I'd never heard of it till I read her memoirs, or New Church, was a faith that found a relationship between the spiritual life and the natural life, which gives a little insight as to why she kept dragging Bill out to the country to get him sober. This was a small but very influential faith. It attracted some very well-known followers at the time. A man called John Chapman, who you may be more familiar with as Johnny Appleseed, Helen Keller, and Robert Frost. Lois felt so well grounded in her own spiritual life and that she didn't need that spiritual awakening that the alcoholics talked about. I'm going to read you a long passage. This is the famous shoe incident and what's significant, its significance for Lois. Even after Bill's spiritual awakening, it didn't occur to me that I needed to change. The idea must have been working in my subconscious, however, for a trivial incident woke me up with a start, and I realized my own need for spiritual growth. One Sunday, Bill casually said to me, "We'll have to hurry or we'll be late for the Oxford group meeting." I had a shoe in my hand, and before I knew what was happening, I had thrown it at him and said, "Damn your old meetings." This unexpected display of anger surprised me even more than it did him. She doesn't say if she hit him or not. I kind of suspect she missed him. I might have had an excuse for losing my temper during his drinking years, but why now when everything was fine? Had I reacted so violently to his very natural remark? I began thinking about it on the way to the meeting. A friend there helped me to realize that although I had been in the group for nearly 2 years trying to help others, I had never put my reliance wholly on God, but had been trying to do it all by myself. That day, I began to look at myself analytically for the first time. Until then, I had taken myself for granted. Because I loved Bill and wanted to help him, I had felt I must be in the right. It has taken me a long time to understand the situation, but bit by bit over the years, I have come to recognize that our relationship, what our relationship had been before and what it later became. Gradually, the true picture became clear when, soon after we were married, it developed that Bill drank to excess. The discovery did not dismay me too much. I had faith in my own power to change him. Living with me would be such an inspiration, I thought, that he would not need the balm of alcohol. But as time went on and his drinking got worse instead of better, neither my willpower nor my inspiring personality, in quotation marks, seemed to be accomplishing its objective. Then I prayed to God to help me. I communed with God, but I did not submit my will to him. I had such belief in my own will that I kept saying to myself just before an operation, she had a series of operations as a consequence of those ectopic pregnancies, I am the captain of my soul, the master of my destiny. I believe that even under an anesthetic, I could bring myself through an operation. Although a little aid from God, my lieutenant, might be helpful. After Bill sobered up, it was a great blow for me to realize that he did not need me in the way he had before. My primary aim in life, helping Bill achieve sobriety, had been canceled out, and I had not yet found anything to take its place. Solely, I recognized that because I had not been able to cure Bill of his alcoholism, I resented the fact that someone else had done so, and I was jealous of his newfound friends. Little by little, I saw that my ego had been nourished during his drinking years by the important roles I had to fill: nurse, mother, breadwinner, decision maker. As we had no children, the mother role was very necessary to me. Although my ego was bolstered by my ability to support us both, however meagerly, and to make the family decisions that Bill was incapable of making, I had felt myself much needed. I also saw that I had been self-righteous and smug, thinking I was doing for Bill all that any wife could do. I have come to believe since that self-righteousness is one of the worst sins. Yes, sins. It is impregnable. No shaft of light can pierce its armor. It keeps its victims apart and aloof from others. You know, I read that passage multiple times because I felt like I really could connect with Lois there through her words. That's her words. So that was the incident of the big blue shoe, although it doesn't say it, her shoe was blue, but we'll talk about this later. This was a display that was made for one of the international conventions. I'm not sure which one. And it's on display at the WSO headquarters. And Becky and I went down there for a tour for the 65th anniversary. And this is one of the pictures we took. And there's Becky and me right outside the WSO headquarters down there in Virginia Beach. So if you go for a tour, which our new delegate will be doing probably not this year, but next year, you too can go and visit the Big Blue Shoe and put some money in the box. So that's the significance of that shoe, the shoe incident. You know, Lois cites in the book a couple other incidences where she threw things. The shoe was not the only thing she threw. She threw a book at some young man back when she was secretly engaged to Bill, who kept hanging around and he was interfering with her sneaking off to see Bill, and she got frustrated and threw a book at him. And, you know, she threw a shoe another time too. I don't think it was at Bill that time, but she recognized that she had a temper. All right, so by this time, Bill's fellowship, it was not yet AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, they were just calling it the fellowship. Bill's fellowship and the Oxford group were parting ways. Bill and the other alcoholics wanted to widen the appeal of their message to those who were not religious, who were not Christian, because many alcoholics fell into those categories. So there was a gradual parting of the ways with the Oxford group. By 1938, Bill had begun writing the 12 steps. And by also in 1938, he started writing the Big Book, which is still in print today. And then in 1939, Bill convinced Lois to give up her job. I guess she was back at Macy's at this point. They gave up their apartment, and for the next 2 or 3 years, they chose to live around, again in quotation marks. They moved around the country, living with AA members and their families while they worked to increase the number of Bill's fellowship groups and reach more and more alcoholics. And during this time period, I mean, they were basically sofa surfers, living with people, and they traveled around all over the country. They lived off of donations from what would later become AA, who contributed to the Bill and Lois Improvement Fund, which we absolutely do not do now in 12-step programs, but they did it back then. Let's see, how are we doing on time? Stepping Stones, AA Growth, and the Beginnings of Al-Anon. By 1941, so this was 2 years of them living around, Bill and Lois were encouraged by some friends to buy a property in Bedford Falls, New York. It was a brown shingled house with a hip roof and 1.7 acres. It was not what Lois had envisioned. She had wanted a little white cottage on a lake, similar to what she had had in her childhood in Vermont, which was on a lake and a big white house. But they went out to see it, and Bill was charmed by the house. And the friends, I mean, I should have friends like this. So between a couple of friends, they arranged for Bill and Lois to buy the house. This is 1941, keep in mind, with nothing down, no interest for the first year, and payments of only $40 a month. Since they were already paying $20 a month for storage of all their earthly possessions while they lived around, they realized that they could probably swing it. So in May of 1941, they bought that property, and first they called it Bilo's Break, or Billow's Break, Bill and Lois. But later the name was changed to one that you all are familiar with, Stepping Stones. And here's a, this is on a forum issue some time back. That's Stepping Stones in the wintertime. And Stacy, our delegate, gets to go there in April, and I'm jealous. My term as delegate, because of COVID, we didn't get to go. We had a virtual tour, we had a presentation, and which was very nice, but I still haven't been there. I'm hoping to go in June for their annual picnic. But anyway, so they bought this house. And Lois was scheduled to go on a cruise to South America with another friend. So Bill was moved in. Lois set up the kitchen and a bedroom for him, but everything else was moved out of storage and was just sitting in boxes around the rest of the house. So off Lois goes on her South American adventure, which is only right considering how much time she spent alone while he was off helping other alcoholics. But while Lois was gone, Bill had a miserable time. The fireplace was the only source of heat. There was no furnace in the house when they first bought it. He developed a bad cold, which settled in his chest. He went to the drugstore to get cough medicine, not appreciating the fact that the medicine had alcohol in it. Fortunately, by this time, he realized that the thoughts he started having, you know, things like, oh, if I had a little whiskey, that would be good for my condition. And maybe if a teaspoon is a good dose for my cough, maybe a tablespoon would be even better, you know, that kind of thinking. And, you know, nobody was there, so who would know if he had a little whiskey? Fortunately, he was able to stop, and he contacted some fellow alcoholics and, you know, survived that temptation and did not relapse. But this was a great lesson for both Bill and Lois. They recognized that even a small amount of alcohol was enough to change an alcoholic's thinking. So Lois returns from her South American cruise, and they decide to settle into the house. The house needed a great deal of work. Like I said, it didn't even have a furnace. And there was very little money to hire workers. So Lois, who by this time is an interior decorator, remember, she took on the challenge with gusto while Bill is off working on writing the big book and, you know, doing promoting that. They published it in-house rather than having a publisher do it. So Lois jumped into fixing up the house, which she thoroughly enjoyed. She painted, she scraped and sanded floors, she made curtains, she reupholstered chairs. She was very, very happy while Bill was off working with his AA groups. By the early 1940s, some of the AA groups were starting to grumble about they wanted their meetings to be for alcoholics only and not include, you know, non-alcoholic family members. The wives who had been attending the AA meetings, they're now called AA by, or Alcoholics Anonymous by them. So they started being relegated to, they had a clubhouse in New York City. They were relegated upstairs while the alcoholics had their meeting. And they, at first they would play cards and gossiped, but from those impromptu groups, the beginnings of Al-Anon, were forming. These mostly wives, there were a few family members who weren't wives, but mostly it was wives. They wanted to try and help each other with the problems they had in living with an alcoholic. So Bill encouraged her to basically do what he had done with AA. She did not want to. She was all involved. She wanted to fix up the house. She wanted to fix up the garden. She was quite happy with the domestic life, but she listened. So they had a long room upstairs in the house. It's now called Stepping Stones. And she converted that into an office. And she had a volunteer, one of the Annies. There were two Annies, an Annie S and an Annie B. And I forget which one is which. But she helped her. And they took letters that the AA people were getting about questions about families of alcoholics. So when they first started, they had a mailing list of 56 groups around the country. So Lois and her friend Annie, they had a reprint of the chapter from the big book called To the Wives. They had a reprint done of that. So they sent copies of that out to each of the addresses along with a letter asking for some suggestions for a name for the, the relatives of alcoholics, and would these informal groups be willing to adopt AA's 12 steps for their own new organization? So the replies were, some replied, some didn't, just like anytime you do a mailing, but the name of Al-Anon was chosen, and yes, the 12 steps were adopted. There was one slight change. In the AA version, they say something about and help alcoholics, and we say and help others. That was the only change. So Al-Anon's development closely followed the trail that was laid out by the AAs before them. First, they organized, they got a name, they began to publish a little bit of literature. By now, they're up to 87 groups on the mailing list. And by 1954, it was necessary for them to have a small paid staff. So they started with a couple of pamphlets. And then in 1955, they published their first book. This is a reprint of the original book. And it's actually quite good. You don't see it used in meetings. It's called the Al-Anon Family Groups. And that's exactly what it is. So if you're interested in our early days and our history, understanding the alcoholic, understanding ourselves, the family group program at work, the sex problem, do husbands of alcoholics need the family groups, and so on and so forth. So this was the first book. It's been reprinted many times. So if you're interested, please check it out. Still valuable today. By 1958, Alateen had begun. So the group was growing exponentially. In 1961, Al-Anon had its first World Service Conference, and it was modeled on the AA conference method model. Between 1951 and 1976, Al-Anon grew from 56 groups to over 12,000 in the US, Canada, and other countries. Then in 1971, Bill passed away, and Lois continued on. She wrote her biography, the one I've been quoting you from, This was published in 1979. And Al-Anon continued to grow. They moved from her upstairs room into a building in New York City, the first World Service organization. They were there for quite a while. And then in 1988, Lois, at the age of 97, passed away. And since she and Bill had no children, Stepping Stones was turned over to a nonprofit, tax-exempt, privately owned foundation that operates it to this day. And Stepping Stones is now a historic site in the National Register of Historic Places. By 2018, there were over 25,000 groups in 133 countries. And we can tell you that since 2018, there has been an explosion in recent years in the electronic meetings, to the point that this year in April, the World Service Conference is poised to admit the 68th area to the World Service Conference. It will be the first non-geographic area. The last one before that was back in like 85, 86. It was Alaska, but now there are so many electronic groups that we will be, World Service Conference will be voting to admit a new electronic area. We're in new territory here. So GRs, you'll be hearing a lot about this. And here in Virginia, we will be voting on our policy on how to handle that in Virginia. We will be discussing it and voting on it in May. I want to leave you with a quote from Lois, which I think captures her. She says, "Our hearts do not need logic. They can love and forgive and accept that which our minds cannot comprehend. Hearts understand in ways minds cannot." So I've shown you a picture of Stepping Stones. This is also, I tried to pull up a lot of these pictures, but I believe they're copyrighted, so I couldn't get my hands on copies. But this is from a cover of the Forum back in 2011. So there's a little snippet of Stepping Stones in the spring. And this is the New York office in New York City. This is the front door of Bill and Lois's home in New York City, Clinton Street, where a lot of early AA meetings and fellowship meetings took place. And here is the new WSO building down in Virginia Beach, where I showed you where Becky and I were there. And there's the sign. And you can go and take tours of WSO. Let's see if I know these are not great ways of displaying the pictures, but I thought I'd show you a few pictures from the book, from Lois's memoir. Remember I told you she had a pony? There she is as a girl riding on her pony named Jerry at the lake up in Vermont. I wish I had a pony when I was a kid. And there is four-year-old Bill Wilson. And here is the Lois's family home in Vermont, where she and all her relatives spent every summer on a lake. That's the kind of house she imagined, but she wound up with Stepping Stones. And the year that they traveled around, this was the tent, and Lois put her skills to work. See that window in it. She attacked that tent. She put windows made out of mosquito netting, and she was quite clever and handy. So she did a lot of things. Let's see. This is inside the first AA clubhouse. It's called the Last Mile, down the long hallway. And Lois and her volunteers set up their office in the upstairs over the AA meetings. And oh, here we go. Here's Clinton Street. This is the New York, I guess it's a brownstone, where they lived for quite a while before they went on their Live Around tour. And here's another picture. It's a dark picture. I can't see too well. But that is another picture of stepping stones in the spring with extensive gardens. She and Bill enjoyed gardening. So everywhere they went, they would collect seeds and plants and all, and bring them home and put them in their gardens. If you're interested in more about Lois and Bill and Stepping Stones is open periodically. Every June, they have a picnic. Of course, during COVID, it's been virtual, but you know, go just Google Stepping Stones and you can see some pictures. And if you Google Lois and ignore the ones from Lois Wilson, who was an actress, you can see all sorts of interesting pictures of our Lois. And, you know, this will tell you about our early years. And this book, Many Voices, One Journey. Last year, as in my capacity as delegate, I was on a thought force on diversity, and we did a deep dive into this book. So if you're curious about our history and how Al-Anon developed and when what was done, it's all in here. Interestingly, the concepts of service were introduced to the World Service Conference at their 10th, I believe it's the was, I'm confused on my dates, but it was early on, it was back in the 80s, and one of our former delegates, our own Dee Moore, was present at that conference where the concepts of service were voted in unanimously by the conference that year. So that ties us to, there was, Richmond also served significantly in the early years of Al-Anon. So we have quite a history. They were officially founded in 1951, so which also coincides with my birth year. So Al-Anon and I are exactly the same age, so that helps me keep up with that. So I encourage you to check out Stepping Stones, and there will be flyers and announcements about the Stepping Stone picnic they have every June. And it is possible to go for tours, and since I don't get to go as a delegate, I do hope to get out there and see it. So Stacy, you have to enjoy it for me as well as yourself. Poor panel 59. We only had one in-person conference. The next two were virtual, so we didn't have the WSO tour and we didn't get to go to Stepping Stone. So boo-hoo poor me. And I don't have a pony, so I'm going to leave you with that. I hope you know Lois a little bit better now. I really feel like I know her better now after diving in and reading her words. She was a wonderful person, it seems. I wish I had met her. She died in 1988. I did not begin in Al-Anon until 1991, so we didn't cross paths. But I have met people who did meet her, and she's an inspiration for us all. So with that, I will close.
Thank you so much, Terry. This was so, thank you for your time and your research and gathering all that information to share with us, and it was very, very interesting. And you know, we've heard bits and pieces, but it's always good to hear more in the context, and you can never hear things too much. So thank you so much for taking the time and for sharing this with us. I will just say, Shirley, is there anything you would like to add as the individual who coordinated all of this for our district and then for the area?
I just want to say, Terry, that was wonderful. I mean, saying some what Sue said, yeah, there were some familiar things, but you did a wonderful deep dive into it, and I really appreciate all the work you put into it. Thank you so much. And I don't know if anybody might have any questions for Terry. If you do, if you want to go ahead and open up the chat box and just send me a question, and I'll call on you in the order that I receive them in the chat box. That way, you can ask Terry yourself, and she can answer, because it looks like she's got a wealth of knowledge now about our
I know topics. A lot more than I did this time last year.
So I will turn it back to you soon.
Thank you. Well, we only have a couple more minutes because we do need to sign off. This site is used for another meeting at 7:30. And I also want to thank Becky for hosting today. I was happy, you know, kind of put it last minute. I knew we were going to record this. And so this morning I texted, I said, Becky, are you going to be at the meeting today? She said, yes. I said, would you mind hosting? And then it was wonderful because it freed me up as well. And so I'm so grateful for you for hosting today and for being here, Becky, and for all of your service, and Terry also for all of your service that you do for all of us. Any questions or anything else anyone would like to share? So I do think it probably would be good to close unless anyone has anything else they wanted to say. All right. Let's close with the Al-Anon Declaration. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Ateen always be there, and let it begin with me. Thank you all so much for coming. Just your presence is so meaningful. Just everyone, you know, sharing this together. And thank you again, Terry. And I will share with folks the link so that those who couldn't come tonight can listen, and we can listen again.
Thank you for inviting me. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but once I got into it, it's like, wow, there's a lot of material here. But I learned a lot too. So thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Well, we'll bid you goodbye. Have a wonderful rest of your evening, everyone. And thank you all. And maybe have a piece of cake on March 4th. That's a couple days from now. And celebrate Lois's official birthday. I'm always up for an excuse for cake. So let's plan it on the 4th. Celebrate Lois. Thanks, everybody. Have a good rest of your evening. Bye-bye.